Let's make it happen, Captain.
From deep inside the Death Star, I'm Larry Larson.
And I'm Gov Maharaj.
And welcome to Defrag. This is the end of build. This is the last thing being recorded on this beautiful set deep inside the Death Star. It actually looks more like the Enterprise than the Death Star.
This is a little bit more Enterprise-y, or, yeah, you know, definitely not Firefly.
It's pretty nice, pretty nice. So we typically don't really big, nice set like this, but being on campus, we wanted to be able to do this here. I'm exhausted.
You helped out this week.
What'd you think? This is your first time helping with Channel 9 Live. It's not as structured as you would think. Huh?
No, well, I never really thought it would be structured. I mean, look who's at the helm here.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, flying by the seat of our pants.
Yeah.
But it was cool. I mean, it's educational, informative, lots of very cool information that's being talked about here at Build.
Yeah.
I mean, the level of people that we've got talking about things and explaining, you know, the stuff that we've just released, things that we're thinking about for the future, kind of re-energizing everybody. It is truly impressive.
So we were going to do Defrag Live, but Gove won't do it because he likes to actually look things up in advance. So he didn't want to sit and wait, have you look at him for 15 minutes while he does a Bing search. So, yeah, no live. But if you want us to do live, leave us a comment. We'd love to do it sometime. We can always do that from the studio. So,
yeah, I'm sure our viewers would love to torture me.
Yeah, I'd love to sit and watch you do Bing on the massive perceptive pixel display.
Oh, that thing is just gorgeous.
It is very nice. It was thrilling. I'll wait for my pick of the weeks, but I got a couple of the build sessions that you just got to watch on demand because they were awesome. I don't even have my laptop with me today. My laptop is wired into the Matrix in the back production room still, so I'm just too tired to unplug everything, so I just printed out the show notes this week. Ran over to the company store, Forza Horizon, I got that, and a wireless speed wheel.
This
is my weekend. I've been preparing for build now for months, and it's going to be time. And the reason I got this now is I saw that... Get in the shot there. The reason I got it now is because I saw that this supports Xbox Smart Glass.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, come on. So, yeah, I'm going to have... And it supports Kinect. So I got Forza, brand new Forza, new controller, Kinect, Xbox Smart Glass. I mean, come on. This is the future. I mean...
It is very cool.
Strap on your seatbelt. Hold on to your hat. This is where everything just starts connecting for Microsoft. All these things together are just going to make some incredible experiences. I just wish I could play on that screen.
Have you played with Smart Glass at all yet?
No, I haven't had time to even hook it up. So I've been reading about it, but I haven't.
Very simple to hook up. I've been playing with it at home. It's not just interaction with games. It's interaction with the entire Xbox. It's so that hold. You know, companion second screen experience.
Yeah.
You know, when you're watching, say, Hulu or you're watching Netflix or Xbox video, it gives you additional information. I know I get additional information when I hook it up to the Xfinity app.
Mm-hmm.
Will like tell you more about the show, the actors in the show. It's kind of like the director commentary without having to listen to anything.
Yeah, awesome.
And, you know, interacting with the Internet Explorer that just came out with the recent update on Xbox.
Mm-hmm.
Typing in web addresses, you can do that right on the touch screen on a tablet.
Yeah. So what are the hardware requirements for a machine that'll do Smart Glass?
Run Win 8.
Yeah. So does it have to be touch, though?
Nope, doesn't have to be touch.
Okay. Awesome. I can't wait to play with that. You can use the trackpad and a laptop.
You know, there's really... It will use anything. It will emulate a controller in the analog stick. It'll you can use the mouse from your laptop in IE. It'll show the mouse.
Awesome.
The IE experience on the Xbox is remarkably good.
Mm-hmm.
It's a usable experience, but, you know, easily a usable experience.
Awesome. All right, so let's get to these questions, and then we got to strike this set and get out of here. All right, first question from Mario. He says, I recently upgraded my home PC from Windows 7 to Windows 8 Pro. I'm loving Windows 8, but I notice that Bing Desktop's no longer working. I really enjoy getting Bing's daily pictures on my desktop every day. I look, but I can't find a Windows 8-specific version. Is there a way to get this functionality back? Thanks, and keep on rocking. And by the way, can I just do a little side note here? If you watched Build this week, keep on rocking. And I think qualifies as part of the Channel 9 Live drinking game.
Rock and roll.
Charles, yeah, Charles Torrey saying rock and roll every 30 seconds. So, yeah, so take a shot if, you're,
probably
if you're playing.
There are very many drunk college kids right now.
Yeah, destroyed. Make sure you're on a liver waiting list if you're playing that game with Charles. All right, so Bing Desktops. How do you get that functionality in Windows 8?
So, unfortunately, the Bing Desktop was deemed to be unsupported on Windows 8.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that it will never be supported. I can't say, you know, if they're going to come out with a new one, but they've decided that they did not want to go that road for Windows 8.
Yeah.
There is a Windows 8 Bing Desktop application in the Windows Store, mm-hmm. so you get a Windows Store app that allow you to download the Bing Desktops and set them as your lock screen. You can save them and use them as your desktop wallpaper. And if you save them in a series, in a folder, you can get the desktop, the classic desktop, as some people might call it, to cycle through those wallpapers, and you can just keep updating as you see fit.
Yeah.
So it's not quite the same experience, but you can get a very, very similar experience.
Cool. Okay. So it's a good starter.
Yes.
And I'm going to go out on a limb and say that's probably free.
It is. It's absolutely free.
Yeah, not surprised. All right, from Philip, he says, I just upgraded from SBS 2008 to SBS. It says 0211, but it's probably 2011.
Yeah.
And just started getting a few user emails, but the body email body is blank. Never had this problem before. Tried with Outlook 2010 and OWA. Both show blank email body.
So this one I've done a little bit of research with, but... there's incomplete information. There's certain things that will affect it. For one thing, I need to know, like, is it only affecting HTML email? If you start sending just plain text email, does it show up correctly? Do you have the latest Exchange updates installed? A lot of sometimes there's a service pack for Exchange on small business, some patches that may need to be installed. Some AV software, if you've installed Exchange-specific email virus filtering and malware filtering, that could be the culprit. If so, turn it off and see if that fixes it. Beyond that, there's really not a lot else that you can do. Something that you could do is check the entire message digest. So you go in Outlook and check the properties of that message. It'll show all the headers of the entire content of that mail. And if it's something that, you know, the mail server is just filtering out, or the message is actually lost, that you can check it out through there.
Okay, awesome. And James, you don't have to come out. I'm going to walk over, and our machine went to sleep. So yeah, that's all right. It's been a long week. I probably should have set the power settings on that. There were a couple times when Charles was live where I had to come out and shake the mouse. All right. So
that's not a euphemism, huh?
It's been a long week. All right. From Eduardo, he says, I'm going to buy a 250 gig SSD, but I was planning to buy two units and connect them in a RAID 0 configuration. Do you think it's risky to use RAID 0 on SSDs in my production desktop? And do you recommend this setup to increase performance, or would I be better off with a 512 gig SSD or even a 256 gig OS and program SSD and another 256 gig SSD for critical data? I liked your response. You said, yeah, it's going to be screaming fast, do it, but back up every night if you do that. I mean, it depends on the SSD too.
Absolutely.
I could name a vendor right now who makes an SSD that I would never do that with, but I won't throw them under the bus like that. But yeah, it's SSDs have a higher failure rate than
currently,
right now, than some platter drives. What are your thoughts on that, though? Which would you do if you were setting it up like that?
Really, I want to know what are you doing with the machine, right?
Yeah.
Like, what is it that you're needing to have that level of performance?
Two SSDs in RAID 0 would scream, right?
It would be amazingly fast.
Yeah.
But, you know, Do you actually need it? Is that the right configuration?
Yes. Of course you need it. Yeah.
Well, I don't know if I would need it. If I was a file server, right?
Yeah.
No, I would not set up in that configuration. I'd stick the OS on a platter drive, and then I'd stick data perhaps on the SSD. If it was a Photoshop rig, then I would set up the OS on a platter drive and install Photoshop and its scratch on the SSD, right? Yeah. There'd be a lot of different configurations here. If you're wanting just to have an entire 500 gig volume, you know, that to set up the RAID 0 in that manner, you're probably better off in just going with a 256 gig for your OS drive and 256 for your data, or just get a smaller OS drive. Like, that 256 gig, that's a fair chunk of change.
Yeah.
You know, to get a decent drive, as you say. You don't want to go bottom of the barrel for SSD because you get what you pay for.
Yeah.
You know, the spring for a good one, if you could really spring for an SLC drive, that would be amazing. Right now, the MLCs are the consumer grade. SLCs are the ones for the enterprise. And those are
what is SLC?
It's the formation. It's how they write to the drive. It's a multiple layer. I'm not entirely sure of what the meaning of the acronym is. But SLC is the single. M is the multiple. It's how they write the data into a sector. You get more on with an MLC, but you have a higher potential rate of failure. Lower number of reads. SLC, you will not have that, or at least not to the same level.
And I have some ancient old platter drives. How long is the life of a SSD as long as a platter drive, a physical drive?
Depending on how many writes that you do to it.
Yeah.
You know, as you know, SSDs have a limited number of writes.
Yeah. So if it's storage, it's going to be different than if you're using
Absolutely.
It as your swap disk. All right. Okay, so let's take next question here from Craig. What, if any, VPN backend server infrastructures are supported inbox by Windows 8 Surface RT?
I've got two things to show on that one. Here's a TechNet article for Windows 8 VPN connectivity. It is a TechNet article, JJ613768.
Okay.
This tells you how to deploy your VPN. A bunch of information. This article is likely going to get updated with additional information. As for the actual backends that are supported out of the gate for RT, you've got the Cisco 2951 VPN server and the Juniper SSG series VPN server that supports it out of the gate.
Okay.
This will use the built-in connection manager into Windows 8. You don't need to install anything else. It will support, you know, IPsec. It'll support L2TP. The VPN or the Cisco VPN server does point-to-point protocol as well. This will support iOS.
Yeah.
So I would highly, highly look at upgrading, utilizing the built-in connection managers in Win8. So you don't have to install a bunch of third-party connection managers.
Okay, cool. All right, from Dave, I know there's a full-screen app for the life of me I can't find where I can just drag and drop files in Explorer for SkyDrive. On Windows 7, when the app is installed, you can set directory. Is there something I'm missing? I think he's talking about Windows 8. So instead of using the SkyDrive store app or the, I guess it's on.
Or the web app.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just need the actual desktop client for SkyDrive.
Okay.
That will only work on Windows 8 and Windows 8 Pro, the x64 version of Windows. It will not install on the Windows RT version.
Okay.
But yes, that'll give you the full drag and drop experience.
All right. We've got a few on Windows 8 licensing and some installation stuff here, so I just put them all together. From Dentaku, who's a Niner. Hey, how you doing? Without buying the more expensive System Builder version of Windows 8, what's the easiest way to install Windows 8 Pro on a blank drive? It seems quite clumsy to have to install another OS first, just so I can wipe it out a few minutes later. I've got an OEM Vista 32 and an OEM Windows 7 64-bit DVD I can use.
Unfortunately, if you're installing clean, you do need the full version of Windows to install it with. What you can do is install when you're installing, when you're setting up, when you're booting from it, you can choose not to put in the product key.
Yeah.
Don't put in the product key, and that'll get you to, that'll get you installed. And afterwards, you can put in the key for your, I believe you put in the key for Windows 7, it'll recognize it, and then you can activate by changing the key again to Windows 8, the upgrade key, and that will get you installed. That's the recovery version of where you say, you know, I do have the Windows 7 key, right? So you're still fully licensed and you still are enabled to get the Windows 8 upgrade version. But please note that if you do that, you will not be able to use your Windows 7 key again. Mm-hmm. So you can't use that on a different machine. Once you've done the upgrade with that key, the 7 key is now nullified for all intents and purposes.
Yeah. Okay. All right, from David, I was going to purchase Windows 8 Pro upgrade today and thought of something. I'd like to keep my DevTools, Visual Studio 2012, SQL Server Blend, etc., separate from my main installation due to the fact that I bought an SSD a little bit smaller than I should have. When buying the Windows 8 Pro upgrade, can I create a VHD with Windows 7, run the 8 upgrade, and run both Windows 8 on my main SSD as well as a VHD without licensing or activation issues? So, it's, yeah.
First things first, you can't upgrade from a native boot VHD.
Yeah.
That's just technically not possible. Two, if you attempt to do this, you will be in violation of the activation and the EULA. Mm-hmm. So on a single machine, you're allowed to use your Win 7 and you're allowed to upgrade it to Windows 8, but you can't have both installations running at the same time.
Okay. All right, and from Mikkel, he says, hello, guys. Coming fast to the point, I got Windows 7 Pro on my notebook. I want to install Windows 8 Pro upgrade. I know I'll get a key for it, but it'll be connected or depending in some way on my Windows 7 Pro, or will it be a totally new version? I bought my Windows 7 Pro some months ago for a lot of money, so I'd like to be... So would I be possible to go on using my Windows 7 Pro on my other machine, or will it be unusable? Another question, if the Windows 8 Pro install depends on the previous installation, will there be a difference upgrading out of Windows 7 Home or Windows 7 Pro? Maybe the answer is logical, but I found strange information spread out over the internet, so let me know which is the real deal.
Okay, so let's try attacking these... or, you know, looking at it...
Let's pick this one apart,
yeah. So if you upgrade, if you bought an upgrade key, as I said previously, you can't keep your Windows 7 Pro installation around. The thing is if you have Windows 7 Pro, you're going to have to upgrade to Windows 8 Pro.
Yeah. It is an upgrade, not a gift with purchase.
Exactly. There is no there's no real difference in terms of the experience from upgrading from home to from Win 7 Home versus Win 7 Pro to Windows 8 Pro.
Yeah.
The upgrade will still occur. You just now get the Pro features of Windows 8 because that's the key that you bought. Mm-hmm. So you get those additional features. If you've installed Windows 7 Pro on your machine, you won't also be able to use that same key on a different machine.
Yeah.
Once it's activated, it's activated.
Okay. All right, next question. I was in the process of creating a VHD in order to install Windows 8 on Win 7 X64 Enterprise. When I close the computer management console, I can no longer connect to the disk management service and cannot delete the VHD file because it's open in system. Did I mess up all chances of this being a viable disk?
Probably not. I mean, if you just reboot the system, when you created the VHD, it's just a file on disk.
Yeah.
If you reboot the system, point it to the VHD again, it should be fine.
Okay. And since this is old, they probably have already done that anyway. But okay. All right. So another question that we had from earlier in the weekend build, someone sent a question during a session. It just didn't fit at the time. But I was like, oh, that's kind of a good question. So I saved it for defrag. They said, is there a C++ API for seeing all in-range wireless SSIDs and signal levels? And we were talking about that, and it's not just a simple API call.
Yeah, unfortunately, something like that is definitely not a simple API call. When you're trying to figure out the strength of signals, you're having to compare it against all of their signals that are in range, right? So it's a lot of mathematics actually going on behind the covers. So there's no single API that says, you know, display strongest wireless signal. It doesn't work like that. There's algorithms involved. But the nice thing is that there are libraries for this kinds of thing.
Yeah.
I know there's open source libraries. You can check, Code Project, CodePlex. There are libraries for getting this information. So if you want to incorporate it into your own program, you probably could. Now, that would likely be, a lot of statistics coming back from the API that you would still have to then map out and put into a UI form, something that is useful. Or, you know, you could graph it out if you wanted to do that. But yeah, there's nothing very simplistic in doing it because it's not a simple thing to do.
Okay. All right. And the last question I have was from Just Build, and it's with this huge display that we have here. And when you can, so the thing with the PPI display, the perceptive pixel display, is you can hook up a any computer that you want to it with Windows 8 on it, plug in the USB, and it's just the most beautiful touch experience you've ever had. But one of the things is the keyboard on here was small. So
it was much smaller than it currently was.
Yeah, so had to make the keyboard bigger so it was, you know, it looked
how big
proper.
Is this screen?
82 inches.
82 inches.
Yeah. This so is, so there's a registry hack you can use to make your keyboard bigger, and it is HKEY Local Machine Software, Microsoft, Windows, Current Version, Explorer, Scaling, and then you set the monitor size.
Right. So what that will do is actually override the system into thinking, you know, how is it supposed to scale the keyboard?
Yeah.
Like, so the current resolution is, say, 1080,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't know that it is on
a
an 82-inch monitor.
Massive
right?
display, yeah.
Right, so it's basically saying, okay, let's redo this algorithm a little bit. We're going to override what the heuristic is and say, I'm on a, you know, certain size monitor, rescale the keyboard.
Yeah, and the one that we used for this was a 27-inch monitor. So just change monitor size to 27, and that's how we got this one. So there you go. Oh, it's so nice.
It is.
All right, we'll play cut the rope before we shut this down. All right, and I'm talking to Jeff Hahn about getting these in the studio. Let's hope we can pull that off. All right, so we are up to the pick of the week. Pick of the week. So this week I want to talk about some of the on-demand videos that you can watch on Channel 9, and they'll be up at least by the time this goes up.
Mm-hmm.
The first one I would mention is Dave Campbell from Day One. It was an incredible talk with Charles Torrey on big data and
there's all the Hadoop stuff.
Yeah. And one of the really cool things about Channel 9 is we just get to talk to all these brains at Microsoft. I mean, they're just massive brains that walk on legs. And he definitely qualifies. It was a really interesting talk. So even if you're not a very technical person, you can follow what he was getting into. And he's got some interesting things, like he had a hack for this little GPS that he carries around with him so he can track, you know, if I leave for work at 8:05, I get to work really quick. If mm-hmm. I leave for work at 8:10, I don't.
Right.
So over the course of time. So it's just kind of an interesting thing, and I would definitely watch that one. The other one I would call out, of course, would be the one from earlier today, Jeff Hahn, who talked with Charles about perceptive pixel displays, touch, multi-user interaction, huge wall-size displays and things like that, which is very interesting. And welcome to the company, Jeff Hahn. I'm just thrilled that he's here. I've always been a big fan of him ever since his 2006 TED speech. And then, of course, Defrag Tools and Defrag. You don't want to miss those, but you're already watching that. So
right.
Yeah.
That was a great thing about Build, in that these are incredibly bright people, but they're mm-hmm. able to explain their concepts to everybody watching. Right?
Yeah.
Like, they're not talking to a bunch of PhDs.
Yeah.
They're talking to relatively everyday folks. We are geeks, of course.
Yeah, of course.
But they were able to get their points across. They're able to get a lot of technical information to people that may not otherwise have digested it. You know,
mm-hmm.
You can only read so many articles, and it's just having that human presence that really does help.
Yeah, and everything changes. So by watching these videos, you're getting the latest information on the different technologies at Microsoft. So I haven't even watched the streaming ones. And what happened is Build was just such a big event on the Microsoft campus. There were 45 minutes to get from one session to another in case you had to go between buildings. So that's when Channel 9 Live was. We took over between those sessions and so went live with our content, which was just a really cool way to do it this year. So
I couldn't get a shuttle to save my life on campus, so I've been hoofing it everywhere.
I got people. You should have said something. I said, I got a VAP over there. You got to pick them up. And then the other pick of the week that we have this week is a Kickstarter project that you're going to show us here. And this is called Wish.
Kind of an interesting name for it, but
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, yeah. He's got a long way to go to meet his goal. I think he's got a $25,000 goal, and he's not even up to $1,000. But if this is something that you really like, then you certainly want to chip in on this. It's going to be a command line application. Sorry, I said Golnaz chiming in my ear. But it's a command line application that adds a lot of functionality to things. So it does things like highlights and colors for different commands and things like that. And when I saw this, I picked this as a pick of the week because I thought, you know, I bet Gov would like that.
See, I really do like these kinds of things for me, who's living in a command line environment almost all the time.
Yeah.
Is very useful for IT admins. This would be extremely useful. They're monitoring a whole bunch of servers. Like an IT admin who's monitoring 100 different servers is not necessarily doing it through a UI.
Yeah.
A lot of it is through PowerShell, you know, so PowerShell remoting. They're interacting with servers that themselves don't have UI, core server.
Yeah.
We made some huge strides with that with Windows Server 2012. So this kind of stuff kind of brings a smarter UI element to the command line. So instead of just being monochrome, right, this brings a lot, it brings additional speed to using the command line interface, additional extensibility through the right-click menu. So you're still using the mouse, you still have full keyboard use. You know, people that are in command line really love the keyboard. I know I do.
Yeah, and when you do something like a CD and you hit tab, it shows you all
completion.
The directories that are in there. So you can just keep picking with a mouse. You don't have to keep typing. Sometimes those can be kind of long. So it saves you a lot of time. And the other thing that had in there, it was kind of interesting, is there's stuff like tabs and, you know, separate windows and things, which I can see where the benefit be. I'm not a command line guy. I always use GUI for just about everything. I know when we're in the studio getting ready for a show, I'll be like dragging files over in Explorer, and you're over there typing things out. And it's just, you know, different ways of doing stuff.
Yeah, but again, that's a great thing about Windows. And, you know, we're in this interesting state, right? We started off with DOS, completely command line.
Yeah.
You know, you move to Windows, Windows 1.0, which is just a UI. On top of the command line interface, same way.
Well, I moved to Norton Commander first.
I remember Norton Commander.
Yeah, so I had kind of an interim step.
Yeah.
And Norton Commander, I would argue, I mean, it wasn't as command line as it was, you know, UI, because I was hitting F5 to select all the files and F8 to copy them over to the other directory. And it's incredibly weird that I remember the function keys for doing that stuff, because that's been since 87 that that came out. So, but I mean, I still remember it like it was yesterday. And, but what am I missing by not using command line? Is there, what are
automation.
You actually doing over there?
I mean, there's a lot of automation that you can do with the command line, scripting things. You know, if you're doing a lot of repetitive tasks in the UI, you might just be able to script them in PowerShell and say, you know, if I need to go and touch 30 different servers to go get some particular log out of the event log and then format it, if I had to import it to Excel and then do some fuzzy graphs, you know, maybe I don't want to do that. Maybe I just want to run a single command in PowerShell that does it all for me.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the great thing about it is, you know, I'll just run the command, hit the servers, it'll give me a status update when it's all done and produce an output Excel file that I can just go look at and say, oh, here's, you know, any crashes, hangs coming from my server, it'll beautify it up if I want it to. There's just so many different things that you can do with the command line just to save time for again, the repetitive tasks.
Awesome.
I mean, it's not going to retouch a picture.
Yeah.
You know? You're going to need a UI to do that.
Yeah. All right. Well, you know, if you're into that kind of thing, you can go to the Kickstarter project and donate, and hopefully this will come out. And I'm pulling for it, even though I don't use command line that much. It looks like kind of a cool system.
It's a neat evolution.
Yeah, and I think it's the kind of thing where I think I probably would use that a little bit more than a DOS window if I was inclined to do that kind of thing anyway. Awesome. That's the show for this week. That's the show for Build. This is the last session. We are done. We're getting out of here. It is over. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next week from the studio.